In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimble.
It's time to talk movies. And not just welcoming Carrie back today, but Alan Adams. It's been a couple of moments since you've been here.
I was going to say, it's been a minute or two since I got here.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to you
as well. It's nice to be here.
Have you been since last week commiserated?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I was telling you off air. I've gotten the dreaded brown tail moth situation going on. Man. So I've got a little bit of itchiness. Itches in my britches, as they say.
Yeah, Carrie, by the way, is a very good scratcher.
Oh, well, I've just been sort of rolling around on the floor. And that's been doing okay. Yeah. Like Stella tips and just like, and I just go out in the yard and roll around on my back. And I didn't think it would feel as good as she makes it look, but man, that's pretty good.
Yeah, the tough part is it makes your leg do that thing.
Yeah, no, my leg shakes. and then I have to shake off. And then I have to go take a shower or else Sheridan gets mad when I track stuff into the house.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, we're sorry to hear that, but glad you're back with us.
I'm glad to be back as well.
Three movies that you have seen for this week anyway. Very interesting and all with unique origins.
Yeah, it's funny how it kind of comes together because we've got... on the one hand, we've got the one theatrical release, the newer theatrical release I saw was Where the Crawdads Sing, based on the recent bestseller. I think it was 2018 by Delia Owens, and there's the whole bizarre story surrounding her and whether or not she and her husband murdered a guy. This book has nothing to do with that, but it's part of the conversation for sure. And then we have Netflix did a new adaptation of Jane Austen's Persuasion that has not been particularly well received by those out there. I find that I am in the minority and that I actually quite enjoyed myself watching that movie. And last but not least, Paws of Fury, Legend of Hank. Do you know anything about this movie?
I know nothing about it.
Okay, because I'm looking forward to talking to you about this. Because when I'm done speaking to you about this, there's a very real chance that if you don't go to the movies to see it with your son, you will see it as soon as it is available at home.
Oh, really?
Because it is also based on a pre-existing property. It is a fairly straightforward and loyal adaptation of the 1974 classic comedy Blazing Saddles.
What?
Yeah.
My goodness.
I had no idea going in. Whoa. And it was just like, but then, in the opening credits, the writers of Blazing Saddles are credited on for the screenplay. And I'm like, wait a second.
Whoa.
Wait a second. Yes, it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but for someone like me who holds Blazing Saddles so dear, it was one of those things where I was like, I just kept giggling. Like, I kept giggling because they, the references are there. I mean, certain references aren't there. but they hewed as close as they could to the original while still being, an animated children's movie.
Well, should we start there? Tell us more.
We might as well, right?
You got me. The hook is set.
Right. Okay, so it's from Nickelodeon Studios. It's Blazing Saddles. Now, they've swapped feudal Japan for the Old West, and instead of interpersonal racial relations, it's a town of cats that hates dogs. From there, it's pretty much the same thing. So you've got the sort of evil functionary of the shogun called Ichiku, voiced by Ricky Gervais. He's got this plan to build this huge elaborate palace so that the shogun, voiced by none other than Mel Brooks, I might add.
No.
So that the shogun will choose him as his successor. However, there's a problem. See, there's this town called Kakamacho.
Which is Japanese for Rock Ridge, right? Yeah.
They won't leave, and he needs the room so he can continue expanding his palace in an effort to impress the shogun. And so he sends his minions, led by his lead minion, voiced by George Takei, to go menace the town. And they show up, and the town's samurai comes out to defend them, sees the hordes descending, and runs away. The samurai runs away. And so this town is left defenseless. They make a direct appeal to the shogun for another samurai to protect their town. Of course, the person in charge of providing them with said samurai, well, Zikachu. And he's not interested in giving them a good samurai. But when they're on the verge of executing a dog that has snuck into the country or whatever, who he's there because he wants to be a samurai. He's dreamed of being a samurai. And Ikichu has an idea, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to give them this inexperienced dog is going to be their samurai." And so he sends Hank. Dog's name is Hank, voiced by Michael Cera. And they send him to protect the town despite him not having any sort of idea how or ability to do so. He shows up at town. He's immediately ostracized because no dogs allowed, Rich.
Right.
And then he sets up shop in the samurai place, and that's where he meets Jimbo, the fat, drunken samurai mentor, voiced by none other than Samuel L. Jackson.
Wow.
And we get some training montages. He starts to learn how to be a samurai. His first big fight is when a massive cat named Sumo shows up, voiced by Jimon Hansu. And through some luck, he defeats Sumo. They wind up bringing Sumo into the fold, so he's on their team now. And they all try to come up with a way to defend the village from the sinister machinations of Ikichu. It's remarkable how closely it hews. Well, just from that description, it's the story is very similar. I don't want to spoil too much, but does Sumo punch a horse? Sumo does. Do they go to a club called Lily's? They do. Is there a scene revolving around copious consumption of beans? Richard, there is.
Oh my gosh, you got me.
It's all there. And here's the thing. The jokes are actually pretty good. It's animated like it's 15 years old. Like it does not like it's kind of crude, kind of flat, has that sort of TV computer generated animation look from the mid-aughts. But the jokes are pretty solid, and I mean the voice cast is stacked. True. And you can't beat the source material.
Right.
So it's such a weird idea. Like it's just like the idea of turning Blazing Saddles into a kid's movie is just so bizarre to me. And yet it's like, you know, this like I'm sitting there. I'm one of two people in the theater. The only other person, by the way, sitting square in the middle of the front row, which is some serious psycho energy.
Ooh, yeah.
That's neither here nor there. But it was just like watching and like reference after reference, like pulled from, and it's just like, and I'm, like every time I'm laughing. I'm like, because I literally can't believe what I'm seeing at times, whether it's, I mentioned the direct pulls, and then you've got Samuel L. Jackson doing variations on his classic cursing that are just delightful. It's just one of those things where it's like, you hear Samuel L. Jackson call someone a mother, father, cockamamie, so-and-so, and you're like, okay, I guess I have to be in on all of this. Look, it's not a great movie, but I had a shockingly good time watching it. And again, I'm not going to say go see it in the theaters, but if you are a person who loves Blazing Saddles here, and you have a child who you want to someday love Blazing Saddles, this is a great place to start.
I'm in. Fantastic. Can't wait. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us here. On Downtown, what's next? Jane Austen? Where do we go?
Let's do Persuasion. It's one of those things where, the Austen heads are hardcore. You know what I mean? Like, they are very, very passionate, and understandably so. Like, Jane Austen is one of the great writers of her or any time, as far as that goes. I personally have a and we've talked about this in the past, I have a bit of an Austen-shaped hole in my literary education. I just, for whatever reason, I just never really crossed paths beyond, you know, a couple of the big ones. I've never read Persuasion, so I couldn't speak to its, you know, accuracy or what have you. A lot of people have been pretty savage in their reviews of this movie. I try to steer clear of those until I write my own review, but it was so vehement that it was kind of hard to avoid. How do you describe it? It's period set, but it's got, they're clearly going for a sort of like a kind of almost a Bridgerton vibe, like trying to capture like the sort of anachronistic kind of those sorts of bits of anachronism to sort of, you know, freshen it or whatever. They've got a lot of fourth wall breaking and whatnot. It's directed by Kerry Cracknell, and look, there are a lot of issues here, but like I said, I enjoyed it. Your mileage may and likely will vary. The plot: we open in the home of the Elliots. This is where we meet Anne Elliot. That's Dakota Johnson. She's a spinster who's never really gotten over the dissolution of her relationship 8 years earlier with a sailor named Frederick Wentworth, played by Cosmo Jarvis. She broke up with him because her family didn't think he was a suitable match for her, and she's never really gotten over it. We're now 8 years later. She's still living with her parents, with her dad, Sir Walter, played by the wonderful Richard E. Grant. And her sister Elizabeth, Yolanda Kettle, but the Elliot's debt is mounting, and so they have to sort of hand over the keys to their manor and move to perish the thought, Bath. They gotta go to Bath because they can live more cheaply there. Anne is, she's basically just there to, you know, take care of her father, her sister, her other sister, who's her sister Mary, played by Mia McKenna Bruce. Who has kids and frankly can't stand the sight of them, and so Anne has to deal with that a lot. But then, man, Wentworth comes back, he's no longer the penniless sailor that she broke up with 8 years ago. He has advanced highly in the Navy. He has made his fortune. He is now a wealthy man, as you might imagine, he still bears a little ill will towards Anne for the circumstances of their breakup. And so we get a lot of awkward interactions between the two of them while we try to figure out, will they, won't they? We don't know. Things are complicated by when their distant cousin, another Mr. Elliot, this one played by Henry Golding, shows up ostensibly to prevent Sir Walter from marrying someone inappropriate, but he seems to have some designs on Anne as well. And, Regency-era hijinks ensue. It's funny, like the modernization of the dialogue doesn't always work. Some of the jokes land, some of them kind of fall flat. There's a very distinct, I mean, people have been breaking the fourth wall forever, but there's a very Fleabag vibe to the way Dakota Johnson is playing this part. A lot of direct address. She's also kind of maybe suffering with a little bit of self-image issues and all that sort of thing. She's very good. You can see moments where she might have been able to push it a little bit farther, but she's quite good. The rest of the cast is various shades of okay, with the exception of Golding, who that dude's a movie star, man. Like he's super charismatic and charming, and things really light up when he hits the scene. It's a little bit of a mismatch, to my mind, it works more often than it doesn't. However, I've heard from a lot of people who very strongly disagree with that take, and who think that this movie is an abomination on the memory of Jane Austen, and those responsible should be punished. That's not me, but if that's how you feel, I'm probably not going to be able to persuade you.
All right, one left, and let's leave out the murder and focus on the book.
Well, there's a murder at the center of the movie too. So that's right. So, Where the Crawdads Sing. It's adapted from the 2018 novel of the same name by Delia Owens. It's directed by Olivia Newman. The adaptation was courtesy of Lucy Albar. And it's this sort of, I don't know, it spans about 15 years or so, the story. And it's the story of this young girl who basically raises herself in the marshes of North Carolina, sort of largely isolated and alone. And the sort of interactions she has with the world around her, such as they are, up until she becomes embroiled in one of the most scandalous and deadly events that the small town of Barkley Cove has ever seen. We open with two kids riding their bikes in 1969. They find a body in the marsh. The authorities are called. They look. There are no fingerprints, no footprints, no evidence. They can't tell if it's an accident or foul play. But when word gets out that this has happened to this specific person, a Chase Andrews, the rumors start. Well, wasn't he involved with that marsh girl?
Mm.
Wasn't he involved with the marsh girl? Didn't he know the marsh girl? And so the marsh girl, played by her name is Kaya. She's played by Daisy Edgar Jones. Is pulled in and basically railroaded in a lot of ways and put on trial, scapegoated for this man's demise. From there, we cut back to 1953, where we meet Kaya as a young girl living in the marsh with her family, her dad, her mom, and her three siblings. It initially seems pretty idyllic, but that illusion is shattered very quickly when we meet. Her dad, played by Garrett Dillahunt, who is emotionally, verbally, and physically abusive to all in the family, starting with the mom, but working his way down through the kids. And we watch in rapid succession as mom leaves, older sisters leave, older brother leaves. And so now we're just left with Kaya and her dad in this place in the marsh. She's too young to go away. But then dad goes away too. And so she's left on her own and she's fending for herself out there. She has some help. There's a gentleman, who goes by the delightful moniker of Jumpin', runs the local sort of general store / dock or whatever. He's played by, Sterling Macer Jr. And his wife Mabel, played by Michael Hyatt. They sort of take Kaya under their wing a little bit, but they can't take her too far under their wing because it's North Carolina in the 50s and they're black. So, there's only so much they can do. And then we sort of fast forward a few years. She's been getting by out there in the woods. We discover that she has a tremendous talent for art. She sketches and paints what she finds out there in the marshes, plants, shells, feathers, what have you. And she sort of reconnects with this boy that she knew back in the day named Tate. He's now grown, played by Taylor John Smith. He wants to connect with her and in the process of doing so, winds up teaching her how to read and write. They have a budding friendship that he wants to be more. She's not sure. He's got these grand plans to go off to college while she's content to stay in the marsh. And so that is obviously a complicating factor. They part ways, but not before he gives her the address of a number of publishers. It's like, your drawings and, you know so much about these things. You could write a book. She doesn't think much of it. Flash forward a couple more years, and then that's when we meet the aforementioned Chase Andrews. He's played by Harris Dickinson. He's a townie, tough guy, like former star quarterback for the high school team. Now he manages the Western Auto. Like he's that guy. Very cool man about town, but for some reason he's spending a lot of time in the marsh with Kaya, but they have to keep it a secret. Can't talk about it. And if she happens to see him in town, she's not supposed to make mention of any of it for reasons that will eventually be made crystal clear. And then and then we wind up in this sort of trial situation. Chase Andrews is dead. Kaya stands accused. The only person willing to even listen to her, such as it is Tom Milton, her lawyer, played by the wonderful David Strathairn. And we watch as this sort of trial unfolds, as she's sort of basically, they basically try to convict her with innuendo. And we see how that plays out over the course of the trial. And we witness its aftermath as well. You know, I'm always leery of movies that are based on recent bestsellers, simply because the track record is bumpy. Like, we don't, you know, there for every you know, for every Gone Girl, there are, you know, a dozen that just don't quite live up to the hype. And unfortunately, this one sort of falls into that category. The biggest issue I had with it was a degree of tonal inconsistency. Like, it just seemed like sometimes you weren't sure. Like, it's like something sad is happening, but it doesn't feel sad. Something happy is happening, it doesn't feel happy. It's just a series of odd choices. Like, the time jumping in the narrative, like, that's not a big deal. Like, I think we're all sort of used to that sort of storytelling at this point. It doesn't feel particularly well executed in this case, but it's fine. It's such a plotty story that a lot of the sort of significant revelations, whether they're character based or emotionally based or what, kind of just get rushed through because there's so much story that needs to be unfolded. So that's a struggle. Daisy Edgar Jones is wonderful. She's wonderful in this movie. Like, she does what she can with what she's given. Everybody else is kind of, it's like everybody only has one or two notes. And they're reasonably well struck notes, but when everybody feels so flat, it's hard to develop that sense of empathy or connection with any of the characters. And if you don't, if you're not connecting with these people, like, it's hard to care about what happens to them. It's got some great atmosphere. Like, there are moments that look beautiful. But when your marsh shots and one performance is really all you're bringing to the table, like, it's tough. I'm curious as to how much, if at all, this movie's reception is going to be impacted by the story surrounding Delia Owens and her husband. By the way, if you're listening, I'm not going to go into it right now, but just look up Delia Owens' husband, Zambia. I believe it's Zambia.
Yeah, and apparently maybe killing a poacher.
Yeah, there's film of someone being murdered. Whether they're directly responsible for that murder, it's difficult to say. But the law enforcement folks in Zambia sure would like to talk to them about it.
Oh, dear.
But anyway, yeah, Where the Crawdads Sing. Like, it's pretty obvious what this movie is going for. But it just, I don't know, it just doesn't really deliver.
All right. Alan, thank you. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you too, man.
We'll catch you again soon.
Yes, sir.